Iowa doesn't have mountains, lakes you can't see across, or towering skyscrapers, but we do have wonderful landmarks that are uniquely our own. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Iowa Week continues today with an exploration of unexpected Iowa attractions. We'll get Iowa's take on Spanish castles, Danish windmills, a comprehensive collection of novelty salt and pepper shakers, matchstick art, and so much more. I'll also talk with Lori Erickson, author of Iowa Off the Beaten Path, and we want to hear from you. What's your favorite unusual Iowa attraction? Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week on Iowa Public Radio. All week long on Talk of Iowa and River to River, we're exploring unexpected Iowa. And this hour, unexpected Iowa attractions. We'll travel to Ida Grove and the Spanish castles there, the Danish windmill in Elkhorn, a comprehensive collection of novelty salt and pepper shakers in Traer, and more this hour. And we also want to hear from you. What is your favorite off-the-wall or unique Iowa attraction? You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also give us a call at 866-780-9100. And with me now is Lori Erickson. She is the author of Iowa Off the Beaten Path, now in its 10th edition. Lori, thank you so much for being here today.
I'm delighted to be here. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about.
Was there something that started you on this journey to look into sort of the unusual Iowa attractions?
Well, I've been a writer for a long time, and actually I was asked if I would do this book. But over the years, it's been one of my very favorite writing projects. I've had the chance to do multiple editions of the book, which has been wonderful, and it's given me an excuse to do something that I really love to do, which is to poke into corners of small towns and parts of the state I wasn't familiar with and discover fun things to do and then tell people about them, which is one of the best things I know to do.
When you first started looking into Iowa attractions, were you surprised by the breadth and the uniqueness of some of the attractions in Iowa?
Well, absolutely. I think especially from the outside, Iowa has a bit of a sedate reputation, perhaps. And I think the more you get to know us, the more quirky we are. And the more you discover that people are doing very interesting things around the state, pursuing passions and discovering hidden treasures. And so, yeah, Iowa's a lot more interesting than people realize.
Well, we are going to go on a journey this hour all around the state. And as I mentioned, we do want to hear from you with your suggestions as well at 866-780-9100. And the first place we're going to go to is Britt, Iowa, up north, home of the Hobo Museum. Linda Hughes is on the line with us. She is museum curator at the Hobo Museum. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks.
And not everybody knows about Britt's connection to hobos, so let's start there. What is the town's connection to hobos?
Well, actually, this all started in the late 1800s. The hobos were a union. They were Tourist Union 63, and they held their convention every year by Chicago. Well, our founding fathers here in Britt read in a newspaper where they no longer wanted to hold their convention out there. So they thought, hey, maybe this would be a way to put Britt on the map. So they invited the head pipe of the hobos, whose hobo moniker was Onion Cotton, to Britt. And Onion Cotton came in 1900, and they threw a great big party for him out here at our fairgrounds. And he agreed at that time Britt would be the home of the National Hobo Convention. And so we've been doing it since 1900, so next year will be our 115th year.
So I think when people hear the term hobo, we have sort of a caricature that pops into mind of a shabbily dressed man with a stick with a little knapsack on the end of it. What is the definition of a hobo?
A definition of a hobo is one who travels and works. Today you would think of a migrant worker going into the fields as a hobo. But back in the day and during the Depression, of course, they traveled by rail to find work. And the word hobo actually comes from that knapsack on the end of the stick, because when the soldiers went home after the Civil War, and there was nothing left for them. So they found a shovel or a hoe and tied their belongings in a shirt or whatever they had to the end of that and threw it over their shoulder and went out in search of work. And that is where the name hobo comes in, from hoe and boy.
Okay. Now, how did the convention came about in 1900? How did the museum come about?
Well, in the late, or in 1980s, our theater here in town closed and sat empty for a while. And there was a group of hobos and Brit residents that had started the Hobo Foundation. And the Hobo Foundation decided to buy the Old Chief Theater and start a museum. So it started in the early 1990s with a shoebox of artifacts. And today our museum is full of hobo artifacts.
So what kinds of things would we see at the museum?
A lot of our artifacts are from the Depression-era hobos. We have their belongings, their clothes, what they carried with them. We also have some tramp art. We have paintings. We have a hobo jungle set up in there, like what you would find along the railroad tracks if you were to go out and look for an old hobo jungle. We have that set up in there with a little...
A hobo jungle, that's like a community that they would have slept in, or is that...
Right. You would find it along the railroad tracks, and that's where they camped at night, where they cooked their food, where they washed their clothes. It was usually along a river, too, so that way they could take their baths and wash their clothes. And we have a little twist of Brit in our museum because like the Chamber of Commerce used to sell hobo like tin cans with the Brit logo on it, and like the neckties, and just a little twist of Brit is into our museum also.
Nice. Now, I think that to some people this sounds like maybe kind of a joke, but I mean, this is a serious investment in sharing an important part of our history in this country.
Yes, it is American history. Kids do study the hobo in Iowa history. The American hobo built the rail system, hospitals, courthouses, worked in the fields. It was a way of life.
And you have descendants of hobos who come to the convention every year and have become part of Brit.
Yes. We also have the Hobo Cemetery here in Brit. So every year on the Friday morning of Hobo Week, we have a memorial service. So we get a lot of the kids and grandchildren of the Depression-era hobos that are buried out here. So we see steam trains, family, fish bones, Connecticut Slim's families. A lot of those people are now coming and to the convention and also promoting Brit and the hobo history.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this history with us today, Linda.
Thank you.
And the Hobo Museum is open during the summertime from 10 to 5, Monday through Friday. This time of year, it's a by appointment kind of thing, right?
Correct. Because at this time of the year, you know, when it starts to get a little colder and through the winter, we don't have a lot of visitors coming through northern Iowa. So
that makes sense. Well, Linda, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Linda Hughes is the museum curator at the Hobo Museum in Brit. We're traveling around the state this hour talking about some of the unexpected and unusual attractions in Iowa. With me is Lori Erickson. She's author of Iowa Off the Beaten Path. And we have callers on the line already to share some of their favorite unexpected Iowa attractions. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. Jim is on the line in Spencer. Hi, Jim. You know what? Can you hear me, Jim?
I can.
Oh, wonderful. What would you like to talk about?
It's always wonderful to hear you, Charity.
Thanks, Jim. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I particularly enjoy the grotto at West Bend and the Abbey Gardner cabin and museum.
Oh, Wait, our producer just accidentally hung up on you. Here, let's try that again. So the Abby Gardner Museum, which is near Spirit Lake?
It's in Arnold's Park, a part of the lakes cluster there. And there's quite a bit of history about, settling this part of the state there.
Absolutely. The Spirit Lake Massacre.
Right.
Right. Well, Jim, thank you so much for sharing those with us.
Thank you.
And Lori, the Grotto at West Bend is one of those places. It's pretty well known in Iowa, and it's pretty unusual. Is that one of the places that you've written about?
Yes, and it's one of my favorites, I would say. It's of interest, I think, to people who have an interest in spiritual sort of sites, but it's also an incredible geological sort of landmark. I have a friend who's a geologist who says that people often take classes there because there are so many interesting stones and minerals that are put into the walls.
Oh, very interesting. And it's a wonderful place to visit. And the cabin that that Abby Gardner Sharp lived in as a child has been moved into Arnold's Park, but it is from that area. It was in Dickin, Iowa, that she was living in that cabin with her family when she was taken captive.
Right. And I think another interesting thing about that is that it probably is the first tourist site in Iowa, which I think is interesting. It marks a terrible tragedy, but really there was good that came out of that as well. Abby Gardner devoted her life really to trying to improve relations between the white settlers and the Native Americans in the area. And so, yeah, it's a poignant place and a beautiful setting. Yeah, I'd recommend it.
Jeff is on the line now from Des Moines. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah.
What would you like to talk about?
West of Des Moines, on the way to Omaha, is a town called Earlham. And it's an old settlement that was a Quaker, and it's named after a town in England, Earlham, and there's Earlham Hall in England. But they have a little historical society, kind of a building next to an old school and meeting house, and that's two stories tall, and it then was added with another thing. And it was actually a school, and there's a lot of history there as far as 120 years ago or so.
Yeah. But that definitely sounds like a wonderful place to visit, and they've really preserved some of the old buildings.
Just the actual museum is an old house. It's someone's house, and then the school is across the street, like in a town square, which is just off of the main street. And
well, Jeff, thank you so much for putting that on our list today. Earlham, Iowa. You can join our conversation this hour with some of your favorite off-the-beaten-path Iowa landmarks and attractions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Iowa Week on Talk of Iowa and River to River. We're exploring unexpected Iowa all week, and this hour we're focusing on unexpected Iowa attractions. With me in the studio is Lori Erickson. She is author of Iowa Off the Beaten Path. We're traveling around the state telephonically and finding out about some unusual attractions this hour. We also want to hear from you. What is your favorite unusual or unexpected Iowa attraction or landmark? Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Terry is on the line in North Liberty. Hi, Terry.
Hi there. How are you
Hi.
Doing?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
I would just like to quickly mention two places in Northeast Iowa that I've found especially interesting. One is the Montauk Mansion, and I believe it's in Claremont, Iowa. And the other one is the Biley Brothers Clocks Museum in Spillville.
All right. And I'm not familiar with the Montauk Mansion. What makes that interesting?
I believe it was a former governor of Iowa built a very large mansion above the town of Montauk on this bluff. And it's still preserved as a museum. And they were world travelers, very wealthy guy. And there's kind of relic.
Okay, so a neat place to visit. And I think a lot of people have heard...
Four recreations.
Okay. Have heard about the clocks in Spillville, but that's a fascinating place to go as well. And let's get on to our next attraction. That is in Elkhorn, Iowa. Elkhorn, Iowa is, believe it or not, the home of the only authentic working Danish windmill in America. And Lisa Steen Riggs is here with us. She's manager of the Danish Windmill and Museum in Elkhorn. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. We're excited to tell people about the Danish Windmill. It was built in 1848, and it came to Elkhorn, well, be 40 years ago. Next year, and it is an actual Danish windmill. You can climb to the top. We have a great Iowa Welcome Center and a great Danish gift shop, and we also on the property have a Viking home. It depicts the life and times of a 900 AD Viking smithy, and we also have a Danish immigrant chapel that was built by a Danish immigrant back in 1959, and it can only fit four people in it. It used to be coined as the world's smallest chapel, but we're in competition with about 10 others.
Well, how did this Danish windmill come to be in Elkhorn?
Well, that's kind
39 years ago.
Exciting story, too, because, you know, we were the largest, or we are the largest Danish rural settlement in the United States, and it was kind of one man's crazy idea to bring an old windmill from Denmark, and everybody thought he was crazy, but it was a way to keep our small town from dying.
Well, they may have thought he was crazy, but a lot of people got on board right away, didn't
they?
Oh,
yeah. We had like $30,000 in pledges raised. We're only a town of 650, but the people are quite proud of it. We had over 300 volunteers. There was no hired help whatsoever, and they were able to get it built and built to a working condition. And it had not worked for 20 years in Denmark.
Wow. So it was being taken apart by a carpenter in Denmark who was creating plans so that it could be put back together when it got here.
Yeah, and we had nobody from Denmark actually came over to help us, so our men, with a lot of common sense, had to figure out where all the pieces went, and when they were done, there was like three pieces left over, but here they were extra parts from an old windmill. But we're enjoying people that are coming off the interstate. We're located in southwest Iowa, halfway between Omaha and Des Moines, and we're open daily, 7 days a week, 12 months out of the year.
Now, of course, these windmills were disappearing for the same reason that windmills everywhere disappeared, because technology had overtaken them.
Right.
But why did the man who had this idea, why did he think it was so important to preserve this piece of history?
Because, you know, the windmills are just so beautiful, and you become addicted to, and as you can see today, we have wind turbines all over Iowa, and that technology came out of the Danish windmill, and people always think we're Dutch, but we're Danish from the country of Denmark, and it's a beautiful memorial to our Danish ancestry in Elkhorn, and also the Bicentennial Project back in 1976.
So this windmill has actually benefited the town of Elkhorn in some really real ways. You feel that it's actually caused the town to grow?
Yes, it has. And because of the windmill, we were able to entice the Danish Museum to be built in Elkhorn over Minneapolis, St. Paul. We have a beautiful, it's called Museum of Danish America. They have several million in it. It tells the story of the Danish immigrant and also the visitors that come today and how they live in America, what happened once they immigrated. So there's a great story. We now have a winery 2 miles outside of town. We have restaurants. We have a hotel. It definitely did the trick.
Fascinating. You know, I think there are so many little attractions around Iowa, and Laura, you may want to chime in on this, where somebody had kind of a crazy idea and put something together. But in this case, I mean, this was a crazy idea that really worked.
Well, I think often a tourism attraction can really be a stimulus for all sorts of good things happening in a community. And, you know, and often it just takes one person with a somewhat crazy idea, and then many, many good things flow from that.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for telling us about the Danish windmill today.
Thank you.
All right. The Danish windmill in Elkhorn. Elkhorn, Iowa is the home to the only authentic working Danish windmill in America. And of course, as Lisa was telling us, a museum and many other things have grown out of bringing that windmill to Elkhorn. And we have so many people on the line who want to share their favorite Iowa attractions. We'll get to a few of those and then we'll travel to yet another Iowa attraction. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jeff is on the line in Bettendorf. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your favorite attraction?
Well, first, Sherry, I'd like to thank you for your patience with all of us and your passion for Iowa. And I am a boater, and I love going up to northeast Iowa. The town of McGregor has a place called Pike's Peak that a lot of Iowans and just people in general from all over the country might not even be aware of was the first Pike's Peak by Zebulon Pike when he was coming through the waterways of this beautiful country. And it's a great vista over Prairie du Chien, which is over on the Wisconsin side, and the meeting of the Wisconsin and the Mississippi rivers.
Well, it's such a wonderful place. And the storyteller, Kevin Kling, actually did a commentary about going to Pike's Peak in McGregor many years ago that aired on NPR. And it's one of my favorite pieces by him because he wrote about the fact that he can imagine how when Zebulon Pike got to Pike's Peak in Iowa, he thought, whoa, it's not going to get any better than this.
I'm sure he was, it's a breathtaking sight, and I'm sure he was taken aback by it. The only thing was, I'm sure it was quite a climb because I would imagine first time through, you wouldn't really know where you were going, what you were doing, and, places along the river can be kind of daunting to access. So they probably had to find their way up there first.
Sure. Well, and it prepared him for the climbs to come when he got to Colorado.
Yeah. The ones that were maybe much more easily mapped because, who knows what this area was like back when. I mean, it was kind of like a jungle.
Right.
You know,
right.
Lewis and Clark, same kind of thing all the way up to Missouri. So, but I appreciate your taking time to point out some of the beautiful places in Iowa. Thanks
well,
for taking my call.
Jeff, thanks so much for your call. And you can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Ryan is on the line in Maxwell. Hi, Ryan.
Morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Oh, a couple of interesting items. First off, in Maxwell, Iowa, which is just a little bit northeast of Des Moines, we have some of probably the neatest museums that you can ever imagine in a small community of only 1,000 people. They have a broad spectrum of stuff everywhere from state items all the way down to local items. It's encompassed in two different buildings. One used to be a furniture store. The other one used to be the old theater. There's also a barn out back that's like a Morton building that's full of machinery. It's open usually on Sundays, from Memorial Day through Labor Day, and then it also is open by appointment through the wintertime.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for sharing, and I love all these small-town museums. If only I had enough time to actually go and poke through all of them. This hour, we're talking about unexpected Iowa attractions. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And now we're going to go to our next attraction on our list, and that's in the very small town of Gladbrook, Iowa. It's the creation of Pat Acton, and it's called Matchstick Marvels. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Matchstick Marvels.
And I think your creations have gotten quite a lot of attention in the last few years, and they seem to get more and more spectacular with each passing year. The last one I saw a news story about was your Matchstick recreation of the International Space Station, I think it was.
Correct.
So how did this get started?
Oh, it's it started out strictly as a hobby nearly 40 years ago. I had always been a woodworker as a kid and had access to my dad's shop and his tools and would build different smaller things of furniture and whatever. Years later, my wife and I graduated from UNI, and we ended up living in Gladbrook, where she taught her whole teaching career. And at the time we moved here, I was working nights at the Eldora Training School with the youth up there. And so in the winter here, I'd sit through the blizzards with nothing to do, no money for tools or shop, and I began making little buildings out of matchsticks. Just with a razor knife and a bottle of glue and a piece of sandpaper. And now, years later, I'm still making little buildings out of matchsticks, but it's literally blossomed into a full-time business now.
Really? So you can support yourself with the matchstick marvels these days?
I have been, yes.
So give me an idea of some of your favorite pieces. Anybody can look at your website and see the White House and see Hogwarts and see the space shuttle and some of the amazing things. What are some of your favorites?
Well, the United States Capitol, which is at the museum, is one of my favorites. But it's a hard question to answer because typically my favorite's the one I'm currently working on. But there's several major pieces at the museum here in town that anybody can see. Two of my favorites there are the United States Capitol that I mentioned, and also the battleship Iowa, which is a 13-foot scale model of the battleship Iowa. Otherwise, Ripley's, believe it or not, has purchased a lot of my models, and they have several pieces that definitely are some of my favorites, like turn-of-the-century steam locomotive and Mississippi River boat, a paddle wheeler. So I have lots of them that are favorites.
Why matchsticks, Pat?
When I was a young kid, probably 8 or 9 years old, I saw on a little local Iowa news program a short story about a retired farmer who had made a model of his farm acreage out of matchsticks, which included the house and barn and some of the outbuildings on his farmstead. And that always stuck in the back of my mind. So when I was working nights and alone in the house during the day, I had remembered back to that and just went to the local grocery store and bought a few boxes of matchsticks and cut the tips off and built a small model of a high steeple country church. And that's where it began. And a short time later, I was reading the book Chesapeake by Michener. And he got very descriptive in there about how they built the sloops and the different types of boats, and he described how they built the frigates on the bay. And I said, boy, you know, a little scale model matchsticks would be kind of dimensionally the right size. And so I made a model of the first commissioned Navy ship in the United States, the USS Constitution, which many people know as Old Ironsides. Mm-hmm. And I actually got it done with the curves and shapes. And every time I'd get something done, I had interest in some other form of architecture or some machine, or, you know, history has been kind of my personal interest since childhood too. And so many of the things I make represent historical things.
And do you still have to cut the heads off of all the matchsticks?
No, I actually got very tired of that. In fact, my wife takes the credit for she was telling me for years,
too,
why don't
think.
She? Well, yeah, it could be. I remember vacuuming the carpet here and little poofs going up, because that was prior to when you had to, you had to strike the match on,
right.
on
oh,
the
no.
box. But anyway, my wife insisted for years that I just contact the company and get the sticks without the tip. And I was telling her, they're not going to send sticks to some guy out in the cornfields of Iowa to make models. But eventually I got so sick and tired of cutting the tips off the matchsticks, meaning you had to handle each one twice instead
right.
of once just to glue it, that I sent a letter. And within a matter of days, I had a reply back from them saying, sure, how many do you want? Here's the prices. And I thought, oh, it was, you know, early marriage. You got to learn to listen to your spouse a little sooner.
There's the moral to the story there.
Yeah, exactly. So,
oh, well, Pat,
so I cut the tips off for about 10 years. We figure about 100,000 matchsticks. And since that time, I've used, in fact, by the time I finish the model I'm working on, I'll be right at 5 million matchsticks. So I'm sure I would have given it up if I was still cutting the tips off.
Pat, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Pat Acton is creator of Matchstick Marvels in Gladbrook, Iowa. The museum is open April through November 30th, 7 days a week from 1 to 5. This hour, we are traveling around the state of Iowa talking about unexpected and unusual Iowa attractions and landmarks. We want to hear about your favorites, too. 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me as well this hour is Lori Erickson, author of Iowa Off the Beaten Path, now in its 10th edition. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about unexpected Iowa attractions. And with me is Lori Erickson, author of Iowa Off the Beaten Path, now in its 10th edition. We're also taking your suggestions. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can also call 866-780-9100. There are a bunch of suggestions on email. This is from Mary. She says, I've lived in Iowa for almost 25 years, and some of my favorite attractions are in the Decorah area, Seed Savers, the Fish Hatchery, and also the Laura Ingalls Wilder Museum in Burr Oak. This is from Lisa. Just north of the Elkhorn Windmill is the German House Barn in Manning, built in the 1600s and brought to Iowa. A similar story and a really cool building to visit. This one's from David. The Fred Maytag Bowl is located in a natural amphitheater area of Newton's Maytag Park. It is, in fact, a large bowl perpendicular to the ground with a stage used for performances, high school graduations, and special events. There's a parking area on the high ground where Newtonians could sit in their cars to enjoy community band concerts and applaud with horn honks of appreciation. So you can join the conversation with your emails. Again, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And now we're going to go out to western Iowa. And if you have ever passed through Ida Grove, Iowa, you have been met with an unusual sight, a number of castles, turrets, a miniature version of the HMS Bounty on a man-made lake. Not what you expect to see when you're driving through small town Iowa. Morris Hurd, mayor of Ida Grove, is here with us on the line. Hi, Morris.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today.
It's a pleasure.
And all of these castles, all of these little attractions are the brainchild of just one man. Tell me about him.
Well, Byron Godberson, who passed away about 10 years ago, was a World War II veteran who saw a lot of war action over in Europe, but he also looked around and saw the scenery. He was impressed with all the castles that he saw in Europe and especially the Spanish architecture. And when he came home, he couldn't get it out of his mind. He started a factory and was quite successful and had some money, so he just started building one castellated building after another, keeping in mind the castles he saw.
So, and these are our scale models of castles. They're not quite on
No, they really aren't. It's just, let's see, it's his own thing. You have, come to Ida Grove and see them, and you'll see what he made. But it is grounded on Spanish architecture.
All right, and these are privately owned buildings. Are there
Yes.
castles that people can actually go into?
Yes, there really are. I suppose the biggest one is our Skate Palace. It's a skating rink, a huge skating rink, and has several towers and turrets all around it. And it can hold up to 800 people. And we have lots of community events and wedding receptions, and it's a real community center. So it's the one that's the most accessible. But then Byron's factory is a great big castle, too, even that castle where he makes boat trailers, floating docks, and boat ramps, accessories for people who like to boat. He has a huge factory, and it's even done in his castle motif.
So you grew up in Ida Grove.
Yes, I did.
What did people think about all of these castles when they were being built?
Well, we were amazed and amused.
Amazed and amused.
Yes.
So it strikes me as kind of an unusual thing in Iowa. We have some stereotypes about Iowans being understated and not tooting their own horns. It seems surprising that a man, a very successful man, would transform an entire town by building castles all over it.
That's what he did. He certainly left his mark.
Well, and it certainly left a mark on Ida Grove and made it a wonderful place to visit. Morris, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Okay.
Morris Hurd is mayor of Ida Grove, home of the Ida Grove Castles. And we're going to travel in just a couple of minutes to the Salt and Pepper Shaker Gallery in Traer. Attractions on a much smaller scale. But let's get to the phone. So many people want to share their favorite places. Let's hear from Ralph on the line in Allison. Hi, Ralph. Oh, we just ran into our phone problem again. I'm sorry. Lori, let's talk with you for a couple of minutes because you've been responding to people's favorite places, but we haven't actually heard much about your favorite places this hour. And a lot of the places that you love to visit are some of our outdoor attractions and treasures.
That's right. And a place that I would recommend that people visit right now and through the end of the year is the Hitchcock Nature Center, which is in the Luss Hills of western Iowa. It's north of Council Bluffs. It's one of the best places in North America to watch migrating raptors. And they have a tall observation tower there, and you can sit up there and you can watch literally hundreds of falcons and eagles and ospreys and broadwing hawks and kestrels fly south at this time of year. Every day, hundreds go by. Also, I think another treasure in Iowa are our tall grass prairies. And many people are, I think, more aware of this wonderful landscape that was really in danger of being lost forever and now is being brought back. And Hayden Prairie, it's a state preserve in northern Iowa, not too far from Cresco. That's a true prairie remnant that was never plowed. And then we also have the Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge near Des Moines, which is the largest reconstruction of a tall grass prairie ecosystem in the United States.
It's such an exciting place to visit because mm-hmm. you can really feel like you're lost in the prairie as you would have been when the settlers first came.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
Let's get back to the phones here. We have so many people who want to talk about their places. And Ralph and Allison, we can take your call now. Sorry about that. Hi, Ralph.
Hello. Thank you for the call. Thank you for the program.
Yeah, what's your favorite?
Yes, the Little Brown Church, just east of Nashua, Iowa. A rather unique story there, built after the Civil War, and became famous because of the folk hymn about the Little Brown Church and the many thousands of people who have come there to be married now.
Right, right. A wonderful little song. I'm not going to sing it for you.
Yes.
A very cute little church. Ralph, thank you so much for sharing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And let's go to Dennis in Walford. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I'm from Team 99 Counties.
Right,
you remember
right.
Me.
Yeah. And how many counties are you up to now?
64.
You have run across 64 of Iowa's counties going at least a marathon or more. So, all right.
Yeah. And my head's spinning because I've run by a lot of the stuff that you've talked about.
Sure.
Elkhorn is one of our stops every year. We ran across Shelby County and ran through Elkhorn on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. They have Yule Fest there every year. And we always make a stop there. We always run counties out west so we can go there. Last year when we were there, they did a dance, a traditional dance from Denmark. And we spoke with the mayor, and it turns out they had done a documentary of Elkhorn, which was shown on TV in Denmark and was the largest watched show in Denmark ever.
Wow.
And I just wanted to mention that. It was really cool because it was just a surprise because we had gone there 3 years before that, and it was just we have dinner there, and that's about it. But all of a sudden it broke out in dance, and it was just a cool traditional
dance.
So there's that. And one of the things we were surprised at not too far from there by Anita, in between Anita and Adair, is the site where Jesse James did the first train robbery west of the Mississippi River.
Wow.
In 1873. And that was a cool surprise for us.
Sure. And, Goosebumps, I'll bet.
Yeah. And one other thing I'm going to plug, my small town of Saudi in northeast Iowa, town of about 14 people. And just outside of Saudi is where Dr. Norman Borlaug is from.
Mm-hmm.
And you can visit his school and his home there.
Wow.
And I'm partial to that because my aunts and uncles actually went to school with them, and their names are on the plaque out in front of the school. So that's pretty cool.
All right. Excellent. And what county are you running across next, Dennis?
I believe we're running across Boone County in 2 weeks.
All right. That's going to be hilly. Good luck.
Yeah. And next weekend, this coming weekend, we're taking a weekend off so I can run the Quad City Marathon.
That doesn't sound like a weekend off, but Dennis, thanks so much for your call.
You bet. Great talking to you, and thanks for the show.
Yeah. And we're going to go now to the Salt and Pepper Shaker Gallery, which is in Traer, Iowa. And Ellen Young is on the line with us now from the Salt and Pepper Shaker Gallery. Hello, Ellen.
Good morning, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. And how many salt and pepper shakers do you have in your gallery?
Well, right now we have on display about 14,500. That's the base collection that we obtained from Ruth Rasmussen, who's from Traer. And then people have been bringing us shakers for the last 4 years. We think we have maybe 10,000 pair more in the basement that haven't been unpacked yet.
Oh, my goodness. So Ruth was collecting all of these salt and pepper shakers for many years, and someone convinced her to sell them to the city? How did that happen?
Well, I went to a meeting in Des Moines, and they had a breakout session, and they said, if you want people to come to your community, use what you have in the community and capitalize on it. Well, the only thing that I could think of that Traer had, besides their famous winding stairs, was an 80-some-year-old woman who had collected 14,500 pairs of shakers. So we started to talk to Ruth and eventually worked out an agreement with her. And she is very proud of her collection and what we've done with it. It's in a beautiful building and beautifully displayed, and it's all worked out really well.
Wow. So what is your favorite set?
Well, my favorite set is not only cute, but there's a play on words. It's a little explorer, and he's in a cooking pot. That's one shaker. The other shaker is a native leaning against a palm tree, and he's reading a book, obviously a recipe book, and on the cover it says, how to serve your fellow man. And the total irony, to add to the irony of that pair, there's a little sticker on the side of the Explorer shaker, and it's a souvenir of the Amanas.
That seems a little unexpected.
Yeah.
There's also, you have a an adult section of the Salt and Pepper Shaker Gallery that's behind a door. What is back there?
Kind of like in the old libraries when the librarians kept some books under the counter, some special ones. Well, we have a little section in the corner of the gallery that has a few they're not really obscene or anything, but they're kind of more for adults than children. So we just have a little door on it, and when adults are there, we make sure they see the naughty corner. But when children are in the building, we just leave the door shut, and they aren't even aware that they're there. So, but the adults all get quite a tickle out of looking at those. So.
Oh, Ellen, thank you so much for sharing with us today.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you. For asking us.
Yeah, Ellen Young is director of the Salt and Pepper Shaker Gallery in Traer, home to 14,500 sets of salt and pepper shakers that were collected by Ruth Rasmussen of Traer over the years. And Lori, we've been talking about so many wonderful attractions in Iowa. One of the interesting things, way back at the beginning of the hour, we were talking about the Abby Gardner Sharp Cabin, and you mentioned that that was one of the first tourist attractions in Iowa, the site of terrible massacres. So that seems like a very macabre attraction. We have a number of those in Iowa, places that have to do with death and dying that people just can't seem to get enough of.
Well, the most famous one is probably the Villisca Axe Murder House in southwestern Iowa, where there were two adults and six children who were found murdered in their beds in 1912. And people love to go there. You can stay overnight if you're really brave, or you can do a tour during the day. Much less macabre is the site near Clear Lake, where in 1959, Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and several other musicians were killed the day the music died, according to the song. And I love that place. I got the chance to visit that just last year, and I thought it was just a really lovely pilgrimage spot, really. There were people there from Texas and Minnesota when I was there on a weekday. People leave coins there because it relates to the story of the musicians flipped a coin to decide who was going to take that fateful plane ride. And so it sort of makes you think about your own mortality as well. And then I also love the Mason House Inn in Bentonsport, which is said to be one of the most haunted places in America. And they do ghost hunting classes throughout the year. They bring in a celebrity ghost hunter. There's an occupation for you. And I've done them, and I just thought it was great fun. I didn't see anything, but it's a great story to go there.
That's wonderful. And you also, on a more beautiful and spiritual note, one of your other favorite places to visit is the New Mellery Abbey near Dubuque.
I think the New Mellery Abbey Church is one of the most beautiful I've ever seen, and I have traveled around the world and looked at a lot of religious sites. It's a beautiful church with limestone walls and a red oak ceiling and pews. It's simple and contemplative. They welcome visitors at all times of the day and night. If you come at the right time, you can see the monks doing services and pray along with them, and I think that's a real Iowa treasure.
Well, Lori, thank you so much for being here today. And now I have my list of places to go in Iowa is even longer than it was before.
Well, so, thank you for having me.
Lori Erickson is author of Iowa Off the Beaten Path, now in its 10th edition. Thank you so much to everybody who called and sent emails. We didn't have time to share everyone's suggestions this hour. We're going to continue our Iowa Week Unexpected Iowa on River to River and Talk of Iowa today. And tomorrow, on Talk of Iowa, unexpected horticulture in the state of Iowa. We'll visit a prairie fen. We'll also talk about fall mushroom hunting and all kinds of interesting things growing in the state of Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe.
There's a church in the valley by the water. So dear to my child.